I'm going to check your levels to make sure that your levels are good. I'm probably going to ask you to be about as close to the mic as I am. Don't worry about being too close. And so I'll check your levels by asking you to give me your name with the correct spelling.
Rochelle, R-O-C-H-E-L-L-E, Ruth Child, R-U-T-H-C-H-I-L-D.
Okay, and where do you live?
I live in Brookline, Massachusetts.
Brookline, home of the Kennedys. Well,
the birthplace, yeah.
Right, not anymore.
Well, actually, Joe Kennedy III lived in Brookline for a while. He's our representative, our congressional representative.
All right. Well, so tell me why you are on campus this week.
I'm on campus to screen the movie, the documentary Left on Pearl, Women Take Over 888 Memorial Drive, which is a documentary about the surprise ending of the 1971 International Women's Day March in Boston.
Well, could we, let's just tell the story about that real quick, because not everybody who's interested is going to be able to attend, so.
Yeah, so International Women's Day is actually a holiday which started in the United States, even though it's the one place in which it's hardly celebrated. It's celebrated around the world. But it became more visible in the 1970s and became a holiday that was celebrated by the what's called the second wave of the women's movement, which emerged in the late 60s and early 70s. We decided in Boston, there had been a celebration of International Women's Day in 1970, and in 71 we decided that we wanted to do something more dramatic. And so we had a rally downtown near the State House. Boston is the capital of Massachusetts. And while we were having the rally, another group of women took over a building that was on the edge of the Harvard campus, 888 Memorial Drive, and declared it a women's center. And held it for 10 days, and at the end of that time, left the building in victory, got some money from a woman who was the chair of the Radcliffe College Board of Trustees, that was the women's college at Harvard, and used it to buy a building in the center of Cambridge and named it a women's center. And the women's center is still in existence now, so it's the longest continuously operating women's center probably in the world and most likely in the United States at least. And it's been a place that has mothered a whole bunch of projects like one of the first rape crisis centers, shelter for battered women, a shelter for women coming out of mental hospitals, lesbian liberation, women's school, and I can go on and on and on. And it's a very vibrant place that is doing and serving as a space for women to get together, gather, talk, develop projects to this day.
How do you explain to someone who's 18, 19, 20 years old, what it was like then, and how do you communicate the urgency of the need for that sort of center, and particularly the urgency of women taking matters into their own hands and doing it themselves? Because so commonly when people have a petition of some sort, they're told to go through the channels, do this, do that, do it through the government, and so forth. So if you could explain why there was this need and why taking matters into their own hands was the best solution for the situation that they were facing then.
Well, it's I think it's hard to imagine what it was like in the late 1960s and the early 1970s, which was a time of great social ferment. At Harvard, actually, they have an archive for that period, and they call it the Time of Troubles. There was a war going on in Vietnam. It was the first time that you could actually see the effects of the war on your TV screens at night. There was the civil rights movement. There were tenants' rights movements. There were student right movements. Of course, there was the women's movement. And it's really hard now to remember what it was like at that time in terms of what how women were viewed and what our place was viewed to be in society. For example, at the end of the 60s and the early 70s, want ads were segregated by sex. So the good jobs were generally the jobs that were in the male section, and you couldn't apply for those jobs. And the not so good jobs, or let's say the ones that paid less often, like being a secretary or being a clerk, were the ones that were listed on the women's side. So it's hard to imagine at this point that that kind of segregation went on, but it did. So women were generally relegated to jobs that were considered subordinate. The jobs that were considered to be more administrative, more responsible, were the ones that were held by men. And in the family, also, the man was considered to be the breadwinner, and the woman was considered to be the person who stayed home with the kids. And again, that's a great simplification, but that was much more how society was structured at that point. And so those who wanted to challenge that very often joined the nascent, the beginning of the women's movement, and began to challenge those ways in which society was structured. Why do an action like our action? Again, I think it's one has to understand the context, and it's one of the things that we spend a fair amount of time on in the film. It was a time when people often took matters into their own hands, and there were more takeovers of buildings. There were more... It was a time when the Equal Rights Amendment was actually being still considered and almost ratified. It still hasn't been ratified to this day. Abortion was illegal. So child care was considered to be something that was done by women in the home for the most part. Women didn't make the same money, same wages that men did, generally speaking. And again, the idea was that a man needed the money to support a whole family, and women didn't. Again, these were prevailing beliefs at that time. So it was there were many things against which people who believed in greater equality or didn't really fit into the norms of that society wanted to challenge, and that's really where the women's movement arose.
Getting back to the film, what's the origin of the film's title?
Left on Pearl, in the process of the march, generally marches in Boston start in the downtown Boston, and often will then cross over into Cambridge and end up in Harvard Square. So our march started in downtown Boston, and we actually had stops along the way just to highlight the oppression of women, so that we stopped at the State House because the legislature needed to act on equal rights laws and hadn't. We stopped at the jail because many women were jailed, especially for prostitution, and whereas the men who frequented prostitution sites or bought prostitution were not punished. We stopped at the Playboy Club. There was a Playboy Club at that point in downtown Boston. So we had a number of sites of sort of showing the exploitation of women in downtown Boston. And then we crossed over into Cambridge, and I think everybody thought we were just going to go right into Harvard Square in the way that most marches did. But instead, we got halfway to Harvard Square, and we turned left on Pearl Street, which is just a kind of side street, a small street in Cambridge. But that took us down to where we had taken over the building on Memorial Drive. So that's why. But it's since that time, since the action took place, Pearl Street has other connections. Pearl Street Productions are Ben Affleck and Matt Damon's production company. And so it has other meanings, I guess, at this point.
So what's the story with that building today and that project?
Well, the building was actually fumigated after we left it, and then it was torn down. And Harvard had wanted to use that property. It was like the last part of the riverfront that had not been built up for student housing or other university purposes. Both Harvard and MIT essentially had bought up the riverfront, except for this particular section. Harvard now has, 30 years later, built graduate student housing on the site of the takeover of the building that we took over.
In Commerce, Texas, there is no women's center. And I understand that you're not familiar with the specifics of this community and its needs. But speaking generally, if there were to be a women's center in 2019 in some small town in any part of the U.S., Texas, or anywhere else, what sort of services and activities do you think could go there?
Well, just as in Cambridge, it's partially a place where women's space where women can go and just meet other women who may have similar issues to theirs. That is, it could be just a place where women get to talk about some of the things that are going on in their lives and get support to be able to deal with or change some of the things that are some of the situations of their lives. So that could be one thing. I can say more about the Women's Center in Cambridge and some of what developed from that. There was a rape crisis center, as I said, shelter for battered women that came out of the Women's Center, a women's community cancer project, a support group for women who have cancer, and also to learn about the ways in which, for example, breast cancer can be treated, the latest medicines or the latest ideas about breast cancer, diet. There are exercise groups. There are women's history groups that could come out of a program like that. It's really the opportunities and the possibilities are pretty endless, but it depends on the community. There might be particular things in Commerce that might be maybe unique or special to this area that might not be so special to women in Cambridge. But that's the whole point, is really to decentralize the movement and just provide safe spaces for women, because there is no country in the world that's a women's country. We're all over the place, but to get us to have spaces where we can just be free to talk amongst ourselves and share some of the things that are going on, even things like having a child. What are the best ways to deal with pregnancy and childbirth? Those are things that are very often invisible, and a women's center would be a place where women could get together and start talking about that.
In the almost five decades since the events described in the film and shown in the film, lots of victories and some setbacks as well. What's your perspective right now on the gains and the losses and the stalemates that have happened since then?
Well, I mean, you know, again, I mentioned it before, we've made some progress on issues like equal pay for equal work, but a lot more has to be done. An equal rights amendment now, once again, there's an attempt to get the Equal Rights Amendment ratified. So I think in terms of economic issues, there's still a lot that needs to be done to get pay equity. Some progress has been made. I think, again, with reproductive rights, abortion is, for the time being, legal. And the assault on not only abortion, but any form of contraception is one that has that ebbs and flows over the last 50 years. Right now, it seems like the assaults are intensifying. The lesbian, gay, and transgender rights have made some. We've certainly had some victories in that area. Certainly in the area of same-sex marriage, who would have even thought about that in the 1970s. So I think there have been, in terms of economic, in terms of kind of sexual preference issues, in terms of maternal rights, I think we've made gains, but we have to be ever vigilant that the gains that we make can't be pushed back. And unfortunately, that's the struggle. It doesn't end. You can't stop.
How does the concept of backlash, what's its relationship to the ongoing efforts for women's freedoms? Because there has been a backlash of sorts that's a reaction against some of the victories that you've mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, I think people don't like, there's often situations in which, for a variety of reasons, change can be very unsettling. And I think that is certainly the case when the rights of women and the roles of women in society are, or sex roles in general, women and men, are challenged. It makes some people really uneasy. It can be liberating for some people, and for some people it can be seen as threatening to their whole way of life. So I think we're seeing that now, just as much as there can be discussions about, well, what are the roles of women and what are the roles of men in the family? I see that in my own case. My son is married and has two children, and he is much more comfortable cooking, for example, in the kitchen than certainly my father was, or other men in my life. So I can see that change now, that there's much more in the way that he and his wife divide up issues, taking care of the children, cleaning up in the house. It's much more equal than it was, and it just seems like that has evolved without a huge amount of struggle between them, that the whole understanding of what how one operates within a family has really changed a lot since the early days of the women's movement. But yes, there are many areas in which things have not changed. There's, if anything, probably economic, well, as we've noticed, I mean, economic inequality has gotten worse. Racism has not been addressed, and in fact is kind of being trumpeted in the highest office in the land. So there are many ways in which it seems as if we've really catered to the people who are more threatened by change than the people who are more hopeful for change.
There are some women in a university environment like the one we have here, where it's not, and however good the academic programs might be, demographically it is not an elite institution. This is a regional public university. People come to this campus from backgrounds where things like protest movements and social change movements are just, for the most part, not part of the world that they grew up in. These are strange concepts. You might encounter some skepticism from women who are undergraduates today, for whom all of the things that are presented in a film like Left on Parole are just strange, perhaps not necessarily offensive or anything, but just concepts that don't seem like they speak directly to them. So how would you address that sort of skepticism from a young woman who might say, what does this have to do with me, all of this?
Well, I think there are a number of ways to address that. One is to look at the history of protest. I think protest can take a number of forms. And while often people say, well, protest has nothing to do with me, when you look at the history of how their lives might be different from their parents, you can, if one is willing to do that, you can see that protest or movements for change have really made a great difference in their lives and their understandings. As I mentioned, just in questions of equal pay for equal work. You may find that your mother or your father or somebody in your own family may have stood up in their own way for greater equality or for against mistreatment. And you may not know that because very often these individual actions are invisible within your own family. So sometimes one way to find out how your family may have coped with change is to interview older people in your own family or your own network, and you'll find that very often there are these untold stories which make something like protest much more meaningful and much more timely. And I would say also that protest takes different forms at different times. I mean, in the early 1970s, maybe it, you know, it may have made sense to do a building takeover, whereas now that would not be a good tactic to use. But it seems to me that if one sees injustice or unfairness, that the issue is what is the best strategy to try to address that. And if you believe that that needs to be changed, what would be the most effective way of doing it? So now it might be not the kind of protest that we did, maybe not the mass protest. There's other ways of doing things, as we saw with the Me Too movement, which was extremely effective and has been. I mean, it, and that was through social media. And that in just, what, in a year or so has made an enormous difference in terms of the understanding of sexual abuse. Look at all the people who have been now, whose behavior has been questioned after years of having that behavior swept under the rug or minimized or hidden. So I think that we need to understand resistance and protest in a very kind of, in many different ways.
Not getting bogged down over questions of tactics and remaining focused on goals and results.
Exactly, exactly. And to use the great techniques and tools that we have right now. I mean, I think social media can be enormously, it can be very destructive, but it can also be enormously helpful.
Is there anything else that you'd like to mention that relevant to your visit here that we haven't discussed that you'd like to pass along?
See the film if you can. It's a women's, it is a protest story with a happy ending. Those are always good. And I would say talk to your family, talk to your friends, find out their own histories. If that is one thing that would come out of seeing a film like our film, I think that would be incredibly useful.